Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. John Patrick Acevedo is a poet who identifies with the early Gnostic Christians, speaks of love, life, and work to an apparently unavailable true love about his need to heal, understand God's mysterious ways, and to become saved consciously by the fundamental wisdom of the Holy Bible. Spirit Nation, Poems from a Heretical Faith, is his debut full-length poetry collection. With piercing insight and lyrical depth, John Patrick explores the intersection of faith, identity, and human reciprocity through the radical new lens he calls Holy Bible Sociology. His poetry navigates the sacred and the secular, calling readers to examine the forces that shape personal belief and collective society. An accomplished poet, John Patrick is a graduate of the College of Communication at Boston University. He's published 11 books completely on his own as the sole proprietor and sole author of Synergy Press Books and Media. He also has produced a classic spoken word CD and the short film Holy Bible Sociology. And John Patrick is our guest on This Week in America. John Patrick, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Really, I'm glad I could make it.
Yeah, there's so much here I want to talk about. And let's start with Spirit Nation. Where did this idea come from? What inspired you to write Spirit Nation? And what does this collection personally mean to you? How did this impact you as you were writing it and presenting it?
Well, Spirit Nation was one of two different dreams I had that gave me a vision of something that I would use in my writing. The idea of Spirit Nation goes all the way back to my very first self-published book. It's a reflection of that in the sense of the opposite. So my first title that I think is still my best is Bad Technology and Poor Weather. With Spirit Nation, I try the opposite in the sense that in the former, it's about going from the progress to the resistance of market. And in this one, Spirit Nation, is about resistance and the progress of the worker.
Well, it's interesting. It's a book you've called the Book of Truths, especially the dynamics of the world of have and have nots and the tension. Talk a little bit about that and how you addressed that in your poem.
Well, I feel that we always get in trouble when we are conflicted with the world and our own beliefs. So I have to tell you that I don't like to talk too much about the have and have nots unless I can back it up well. So all I can say that would be probably a good dive into it is that the Old Testament sociology, which is what Holy Bible Sociology discusses that I created as a concept or as an idea, is that the worker is more involved in that. And it seems that the worker has a sense of progress because of the objectivity of you. My father had a thing with you and me, so I took it further. And so that to balance it off, I believe that the New Testament sociology has the sense of resistance from market. But the interesting thing about it is that if you see how it works between the objective and the subjective, you'll see that the Old Testament is kind of the platform for one to find the you objectivity, which is more understood as New Testament. And the New Testament sociology, as far as finding the subjective in the me or the she, is Old Testament. However, it's basically coming from the New Testament. So we have a hierarchical view from the Old Testament, and we have a egalitarian view from the New Testament. So that's how I came to believe that the Holy Bible is an authority that I can trust, and I have a feeling that in the future we're going to need more authority, and we don't know where it's going to be, but I have a sense that my authority is coming from the Holy Bible as a fundamental work of a belief.
As you can tell, when you read John Patrick's work, The Spirit Nation in particular is what we're talking about. He's got other books, and you'll find all those on his website, and I will give you that information in a second. It will get you thinking and self-reflective, and this is, the book is so well done. Our guest is John Patrick Acevedo. That's A-C-E-V-E-D-O. His website is synergy-press.org. When you go there, you'll find all of the books that John has written and published over the years, including this book, Spirit Nation. The title itself, John, Spirit Nation, is intriguing. What does the phrase Spirit Nation symbolize in the context of your poetry? How does that impact it?
Well, I thought I'd just answer that because I always start with a formulaic approach, a metaphysical approach.
Yes.
And then if I have enough confidence with that, I come up with a title. I work the title until I get a title. And then from the title, I start trying to get fragments. I call them fragments. It's just parts of the poem that I have to get from something that happens to me, you know, an experience, a conversation I overhear, and I say, oh, I can work with that. So, you know, something that they say that is kind of different. A lot of times workers tend to have comments they say at the end of talking to someone or in between the important, obvious kind of lines and all that. So if I hear it, I say, okay, well, that's something. So then I get my editor hat on and I get all my fragments and I move them around and around and around. And so finally I got a poem and then I print it and it's published.
It's just amazing, and they're now available for all of us to read, enjoy, and to ponder. John Patrick Acevedo, his website is synergy-press.org. You describe your work as being from a heretical faith. Can you explain what you mean by that and how it reflects your worldview or your spiritual philosophy?
Well, the thing about it is, I didn't want to say a working faith, because I know that work is very important to the sense of the Old Testament sociology, getting the authority part of it that goes to the New Testament sociology of objectivity and hierarchy. And then I said to myself, maybe I can remember, I could try to suggest. That I am also like the original Gnostic Christians, because they, unlike all the following Christians, are not based on institutional teaching and law as much as they are about their belief and what the scriptures say. And so I said, if they are attracted to see that I'm a heretic, they might also be more attracted to my poetry when they discover that I have a lot of faith, and they say, well, he's a heretic. And then if I mention Gnosticism or wisdom a lot, they might say, oh, he's like a Gnostic. Okay, those are the heretics, they say. Yeah, that's how I do it.
Our guest is John Patrick Acevedo. That's A-C-E-V-E-D-O. Book's available at synergy-press.com. Other places as well. I'll just direct you to the website because it has information on all of the books that John Patrick has available. Your poets touch on deep spiritual and philosophical themes. How do you balance that spirituality and realism in your poetry?
Well, that's a good question. The thing about it is, that I'm trying to say in Spirit Nation, I guess in a way that is talking about the progress that comes from resistance. Therefore, you have to ask, is progress good or evil? So then you say, well, maybe it's both. So you can see that if you have a bad, for example, somebody calls you when you're struggling, you have the resistance, you're struggling with something, someone that you love calls you, and you say, oh, yeah, what? Oh, really? And I get on, and you have all that good, I would say, subjectivity. And then sometimes you can also have a bad sense of objectivity. If maybe you're having your own resistance to things, somebody pops in and gives you a thing about they're having problems with this and that, and you give them all your support and all your faith, but you realize that they really have to figure it out for themselves. So Spirit Nation is kind of a a mix of act and law. So if you have an act of good kind of kindness and encouragement, that's also a spiritual nation you're creating. But by the same token, if you're having problems and somebody calls you and supports you and you feel stronger again, and you're so happy that you talk to them, that's also spirit nation because they yes. came from out, you know, if it's a call, they came or if something happened. I like to think that life has experiences for a reason. And I'd like to say that my father had told me one time that everything has a reason, or there's a reason for everything, is how he put it. And I didn't really think that was possible to accept. So I said, that's not true. He said, yes, it is. And then later I realized that Ecclesiastes has been referred to by many critics of my writing as my most emulated book or gospel in the Holy Bible. So I guess I had to say, well, if that's true, what is it that I remember about when I read the Bible from 1986 to 1990? And I said, well, I did like the part when it says vanity of vanities, all is vanity. But then I said, well, I don't know why I liked it, but anyway, then I realized that the most popular idea that comes from Ecclesiastes is that there's nothing new under the sun. And that's the idea that my father was trying to tell me. So that's how I begin to say that I kind of like to think that the objective and the subjective can happen, without knowing it. And it, as an artist or a poet, I have to capture the subjective and even the objective for the experiential part of the poem, you know. So that's kind of how I see it.
Interesting insight into what goes into John Patrick's poetry. The new book is called Spirit Nation. You'll find it wherever books are sold. His website is synergy-press.org. Many readers describe your poems as both challenging as well as healing. What message or emotional experiences do you hope the reader takes away from your book? What do you hope the takeaway is after reading Spirit Nation?
Well, since Spirit Nation, I really tried to be less, dense, because my family is my main audience, and they kind of consider my poetry to be dark because they don't have a better word for it. But I consider it, the older poems, to be more dense. And that's because I tried to work, like I said, move the words around until I got it just right. And sometimes people don't expect to have to struggle so hard to get to the lines, you know? So then as far as to answer your question, I've always wanted to have people relate to the experiences, but I don't feel like I should make them have kind of like a takeaway that everybody kind of heard of, you know, like a mantra or a slogan or anything like that. I wanted people to get to the point when they say, yeah, that's like my uncle when he did that to me, or I wish I hadn't done that to my mother and all that stuff, you know. So then, so then you get a sense of he's talking to me, and the emotional element of it can almost translate into a spiritual element if you have a faith in some kind of higher power. So I used to tell my mother, because she would always read it and go, okay. So I said to my mother, my ideal is if you laugh and cry from something in the poem at the same time. And that means that you kind of had an experience, you know? And that's kind of like at the heart of the, I guess you call it the ecstatic experience that the church later adopted. And I guess because I'm a seller, too, because I did 20 years with Best Buy, I like to plug the truth in a charismatic way. So that's how I do it.
Well, and you do it so well. And I'm going to take a second here. I'd like for you, John Paul, if you will read one of the poems. We'll do one now, and then at the end of the conversation, I think the Cafe of Daily Surprises is going to be the poem that you're going to read. Let me mention you passed that out there, passed over at Best Buy. Not just did sales with Best Buy, you were a very distinguished salesperson, won numerous awards in working for Best Buy. And I wanted to mention that.
Well, okay, if I may just say, that for some reason, because I was writing poetry, I guess, my happiest times were near the end when they would have me work on the evening of the last day of the fiscal month. And I would have all the tools I needed. And I'd go from having, say, three or five applications successfully processed for a credit card, major credit cards, to 35.
Wow.
You know, so at the end, I would come out of there with all my numbers and count everything, and then maybe call my sister and tell her, I got this number again. I beat my last record. So anyway, and then the next day, I would go to work, and luckily for me, I had a friend that said he hopes I'd get my 20 years, so he was hoping for the best, and I request that he tell me the numbers, because the management would just say, Patrick did, he's number one again, and then move on, you know? So I would have the numbers. I'd get to the point where I had a break, and then I would take the numbers, they all printed out, I'd take the numbers and go through every store in the district, there's like 15 or so stores, and I'd see, okay, I'm still top. Oh, number two. number two, yeah. I'm number two. But I've been number one for many times, and I've gotten, say, 134, I think is my record, and I was upset because I tied that spot, and I said, God, how can somebody have tied it? And then so the another friend I had a lot of friends that like to talk to me, on and off because of my poetry. Because just to finish the first thought, he said, you're not, you know, I said, I'm pissed off. He said, why? You're number one. I said, yeah, but I tied it. So he said, oh, don't worry. You'll do it. You'll break it without a tie. Well, he was kind of right. But I think it was the next month I got 129, but no tie.
What an amazing career you had there, and I love the competitive nature of you. You wanted to be number one.
But I just wanted to say that for me, I was very emotional when I saw, for example, my Boston University the jacket that they have and they sell for the students, you know.
Oh,
and
yes.
I hadn't seen that for a very long time. And one time somebody came in with it. I got kind of sad. And I kind of recalled how at that time I didn't have all this pride and all this, all this energy. I was kind of down and sad and I was in love and drinking and beer every Friday. And I said, God, that was a hard time for me. You know, I realized that. And the other thing is that the people at Best Buy, we always kind of got by on hype, you know, high fives and all that. But occasionally I would actually get emotional with that too, because I would request to have a code one, they call it, which means that people from the store that were available would come to the lanes and help me out. Because sometimes I was by myself for a while. And that happened, numerous times at Best Buy, as far as having to have help. And a lot of times I didn't have the help, but in the front lanes, they could get the code one process going. So when the people came one or two, you know, and they came and I recognized them, you know, so they're like, you know, they're the ones that I gave my poems to when they came by, because they knew I had a new poem, you know? So I got kind of emotional. I said to myself, God, she's going to help me out. You know, like that was how I got a sense of, I guess, the human side of the need, at least for the human side in my poetry. And it's really, I guess, the more honest way to describe how it was. However, being that Best Buy is a giant in sales and all that, you can't really work too much with that, because everybody's moving to the hype, you know. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, it's interesting how you use that. I was going to ask if those 20 years really enter into who you are as an artist, as a poet, and you answered that in talking about those years there. A remarkable story. John Patrick Acevedo, Acevedo, is our guest on the program, talking about Spirit Nation, his new book, the debut full-length book of poetry. I've asked John Patrick to read a couple of poems for us here. This is The Cafe of Daily Surprises. I don't know if you want to just read it and then talk about it, or give us a little background.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
We can read it. Okay, so here goes. The Cafe of Daily Surprises. I suppose my need to write and switch gears a bit and record ideas that I want my life, love, and work to reflect, and experiences that my poems therein that help explain my belief that when humans feel like they are being praised as far as their desires to be something more than they currently are in faith. Moreover, we feel inadequate because of the different types of abuse, how prayer can eliminate fear and insecurity, and how doubt is only a lack of progress waiting to be made. Choice is the human desire to give actively and or passively between the mind and the heart. The passion that is often from guilty, inhuman drives to take actively and or passively between the soul and the body. Choice is sane and can be shared openly. Passion is instinctual and controls privately. Resistance from your world's desire to change your thinking and or feeling creates personal progress that needs to be preserved. Acceptance by your world after you've created your personal happiness demands your acknowledgement of how your world supports your autonomy. Is your glass half full with your submission to their use of your doubts? Maybe it's half empty with your elimination of your world's abuse of your faith. Yet here in this cafe, out on the edge of fail-safe, I write of concepts yet to be taught and experiences only the lost and found get to feel and leave known. That's the cafe that I got finally from somebody that was, I guess, in an apartment, very old, had no family left. And she said, "Are you a doctor?" And I was waiting for someone to come out of there, you know. And I said, "No, I'm a poet." And she said, "Ah, the life of daily surprises." So anyway, that's how I got that.
Well, it's so well done. And as you're reading the poetry, you'll be underlining it, coming back from time to time to little phrases, parts of the poem that John Patrick has put together that gets you thinking. There were times he was reading that and like, I'm glad I have a copy of it because I can go back and go through that again and contemplate that and see how that fits into my life. The poetry is so well done. Time is going by so quickly. I want to talk a little bit more about the writing, and then we'll close with another poem, if that's okay with you.
Sounds great.
Were there any particular life experiences, turning points, that deeply influenced the poems in Spirit Nation? How did that come about, and were there things along the way that really changed who you are or your outlook?
Well, the thing was, for many years... Ever since 1985, I've been writing to some girl, and they've changed, you know, all over the years. But the thing is that the girl didn't have a character, didn't have a, you know, people could hear I'm talking to someone, but everybody in the critique groups would say, "And who was she here?" and point to the page, you know. And I didn't really care too much to talk about that because I was thinking I was going to get my poem to be tighter, you know, as they say. So anyway, I guess then... Around, in 2003, I had a reading that was the first time I had to kind of self-publish something that was kind of cohesive. But then I think it was 2005 that I was going to do a reading in Barnes & Noble, and I invited my father to go, also my sister, and I felt like I needed to show them something, you know? So I really struggled to get a personal kind of sense of truth. And I think after my father kind of saw that I had some potential there, and I did the Mad City Coffee reading, which at that time I had finally gotten poetry that I thought was publishable. And the reason I think that it's publishable is because the way I talked about the girl was a composite of my mother, from my father's perspective, and my crushes. I had like three, and they're different kind of crushes. One of them is more like street smart. Another one is more beautiful and innocent. And the third one is more like, I guess you call it spicy. So I put them together, and then I started to have a sense that I could make, you know, my father understand it with my mother. I can make somebody from the street understand it. I can make somebody that's really sweet understand it. And I can make someone who's looking for some excitement understand it. And that's how I think I was able to evolve with confidence, because I felt that I identified with the person as obviously in different types split up. But for me, the poem served to explain that I was interested in this person, you know. It doesn't matter how many there were, but
yes.
And then they'd also say that I have a chance to tell them about the experiences that I had that made me very happy. And like I said before, when I was younger, I was also sad. But so I tried to make everyone that hears my mixed emotions try to understand their own feelings about, say, some significant other. And that makes the whole idea of a society and family and the I guess they call it the deification of true love for an artist, you know. So that's how that goes.
It's interesting getting into the mind of an accomplished poet, and we've done that. We've had the opportunity to do that in this interview with John Patrick Acevedo. I wanted to just talk one more question here, then I'll have you close. We're rapidly running out of time with another poem. But how does this book differ from your previous works, and what makes it stand out, do you think, as a defining piece of your literary voice so far?
I believe that I tried to push Spirit Nation as far as I could, as opposed to the other books, because I assumed that my other books, I have like six of them that are available, I assumed that they would sell. But I realized finally that unless I kind of, you know, was backing, you know, with the marketing process all the way, like this interview, that I wouldn't really have a chance of selling it. So right now, for example, I'm encouraging my project manager to get some kind of a female reader narration for the audio version that's coming out for somebody that has the kind of a quirky sharpness and emotional insecurity that is conveyed by the great actress Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Mm, and yes. He said he's going to try, but that's just because I feel that if I didn't give my all, it wouldn't sell. And I know that they don't sell even if I give a lot of my interest in trying to get it popular. So that's the main difference. And the other thing about it is, like I said before, my family said, why don't you try to explain a little bit more before, or somehow make it easier to understand? I made a conscious effort. Yeah, I made a conscious effort to kind of take some of the fatty parts out of the poem, you know, that I used to kind of write, and then make it muscular and make it have a skeleton that is strong, you know, and not necessarily have all the mushy stuff that is very cleverly put together.
Well, you've done such a remarkable job with that very talented poet on our program today, and we appreciate that very much. And we're out of time. Let's close here, John Patrick, if you would. Give us another poem, and I think this is what, something new that you just written?
Yes, every reading I do, I like to end with a new poem. So I wrote this just before I got ready for this. So here it goes. All I can say to prepare you for it, is that I wanted to kind of push the notion of Holy Bible sociology to a realistic level. And I guess for me, there are some people that you can't please no matter what. And other people, yes, like to be liked by everybody. So I have to deal with that. And so that's what I'm touching upon in the poem. So it's called Graceful Sacrifice. Christmas sin. I would rather be used than be abused. I would rather show effort's hope that ends than defend the beginner's fear. I would rather take from rich women than to give to poor women. I would rather look and feel good than to constantly have to learn. Old Testament sociology illustrates how when one judges one, the other judges them back. And when one shows mercy upon one, the other also judges them back. The Old Testament speaks of an eye for an eye. I call this resistance, bad technology and poor weather. New Testament sociology demonstrates how when one judges the other can show mercy upon them, as well as when the other shows mercy upon them, the other returns the favor by mercy as well. The New Testament speaks of turning the other cheek. I call this progress and a spirit nation. Time is the hierarchy of he objectivity, the Old Testament worker. Authority is egalitarianism of she subjectivity, the New Testament market. Submission to hate's compromises through prize competition cannot remove the strength of faith any more than love's compromises can be proved by trying to eliminate lust's competition and the weaknesses of doubt. I would rather finish thought than tangle lie, rather be a fast hustler than a married fool, write wrongs on dead meds than start lines. Thank you very much.
That was so well done and so well read. You can tell that he's done some public reading, and you'll get information on that and information on the video that we talked about at John Patrick's website, which is synergy-press.org. The new book is Spirit Nation, Poems from a Heretical Faith. That's the new one. That's available there, available wherever books are sold. But if you go to the website, you'll get more information on John Patrick. John Patrick, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Continued success with your poetry in reaching more people and shaping more lives. You is very powerful. And I thank you for spending some time with us on the program today.
Well, I'm glad I could make it, like I said.
Well, glad that you're here. And again, you'll find all the information at John Patrick's website, synergy-press.org. I'd like to thank GlassLink Solutions, LLC.com for arranging our conversation today with John Patrick, a full-service self-publishing and marketing company that provides existing and aspiring authors exclusive access to publish and market their books. And I thank them for being here, bringing John Patrick to the program today. Their website, GlassLinkSolutionsLLC.com. You're listening to This Week in America, and there's more on today's program. And we're back right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.